support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier.
Live host, I'm Lori Neufeld, here in the Alaska Live Archive Studios, cellist Zuhl Bailey. Welcome to Alaska Live.
It's great to be back. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Shall we start with a piece?
Sure. All right, 1 second.
Cellist Zuhl Bailey joins us here for KUAC's Alaska Live. It was a very familiar piece. Remind me what that was.
Well, the reason why I played that, which was a little bit impromptu, we were discussing before the microphones came on that some people listen to Bach. In particular, this person listens to my Bach while flying on airplanes. And it brings a lot of peace and serenity to them. And I felt that that kind of translated into such a tumultuous time right now in our environment, the United States, with everything going on in the world. And I thought that it would be a nice way to start with a sarabande, a Spanish dance, slow dance from the first Bach cello suite. And it always kind of, for me, it brings things back to a centered position, peaceful, reminds me of the path,
yeah.
The purity of being a human being. And so that was the Bach prelude number. That was the Bach Sarabande number 1 in G major.
And that 2-CD recording that you made of the Bach cello suites, it incorporates the breathing of both the cello and your breath in it. And we could hear that here in the live performance too. Mm. And I can see why that would be calming on an airplane, to be listening on your earbuds, your headphones, and to just take you away and have part of that human experience.
Going back to what we're dealing with, I think these days, is that it makes it very human. In fact, we were discussing, again, 5 minutes ago, that the breathing in this recording, and that, after I finished the recording, they asked me if I wanted the breathing removed. And I knew that it would be criticized if I kept it in there because we're so used to sterile music, like perfectly surgical recordings. But I thought, you know, it's a living, breathing thing. I'm breathing to keep a piece about myself when playing, to end and begin phrases. So I dared. It's not a live recording either. I said, leave it in there. Let them hear me as part of this experience. And interestingly, it's about half and half. People who are so used to the sterile recordings wish it wasn't there. And those who have heard me play and experience live music all the time thank me for it, because it's very zen to kind of take a deep breath and sigh and enjoy.
I like that. It takes it apart from some of the other recordings. You know, many have recorded the Bach cello suites, and that sets yours apart. Not only the level of playing is exquisite, but, you know, that leaving those breaths audible in the recording. Well, speaking of performances, last night you played on stage with pianist Edward Zilberkant, and you played some really complex pieces, and you just arrived the night before on Wednesday night, and then Thursday night you're on stage playing these what probably is very taxing pieces. How do you do that as a touring performer?
Well, gosh, it just depends on the program. It depends on the situation. I had to come in the night before because of just my schedule. It was not a planned thing, where I thought we could just put this together at the last minute. I also trust in my friendship and my admiration of Edward Zilberkant. I mean, the two pieces you're probably talking about are the Brahms F major sonata and the Rachmaninoff sonata, which in many ways are led by the piano. And he and I discussed on the phone about our getting ready for rehearsals. I said, Edward, treat these as solo piano sonatas and let me kind of weave myself through them, and then it should be fine. There's not much to discuss, because Brahms would have been sitting at the piano in his sonata, and Rachmaninoff, of course, at the piano. So the night before, it was as I expected. We read through the pieces, and we kind of chuckled at the fact that let's just leave them alone and see you at the concert. A couple of things we had to discuss about timing between some sections of silence, which is interesting because I think most people don't realize that silence is also music. And the composers write those pauses in. And those pauses are interestingly, the only things we had to discuss.
How long they would be.
What's your comfort zone with that pause between sections? The other piece that I played, which was kind of panicked and frantic, was the Paganini Variations by Gregor Piatigorsky, which basically showcases, as the Rachmaninoff did the piano, what the cello is capable of in every possible way.
That was your showcase piece right before intermission
last night.
Last night we had an Alaska Live here with the Norris Bowers Band, and some of the audience came straight from your performance down here to our Alaska Live archive studios and were part of the audience here. And so they were just raving about your performance with Edward last night. So,
thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, then you have to rehearse with the Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra because you are the guest artist on Sunday with the Dvorak. And how do you pick a piece to play with a certain symphony?
Alaska is very different for me. So we have to start by saying this is, interestingly, my 10th anniversary coming to Alaska annually as the artistic director of the Sitka Summer Music Festival. With that, I feel like this is home. This is my third performance with the symphony. The last time I played with them was with the founder of the Sitka Summer Music Festival, Paul Rosenthal, and we did the Brahms Double and Beethoven Triple Concerto. The first time I played with the orchestra, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago, was the Elgar Cello Concerto. So when a cellist is invited to play with an orchestra and a friend is invited, as I hope I am, or a member of the family, it's kind of a celebration. And so we'd already done the Elgar, which is kind of the other twin tower mega work for cello and orchestra, and there's only one more, and that's the Dvorak Cello Concerto, where everybody's involved. And I mean, there's lots of wonderful works like Schumann and Cézanne and Haydn, but they're very much showcases for the featured instrument. In the Dvorak, in the Elgar, they're very much symphonies with a great cello part. So I look forward to tonight because I trust Edward. I trust the orchestra. The hall is beautiful, as it was last night. Looking out and seeing so many familiar faces and to share that all together. That's what's so great about live music, is that it's not, you're part of something bigger and all of you are together enjoying it. It's not you're not witnessing something, you're a piece of it. And as I was saying, I face the audience. So even on Sunday, I'll be watching from the front of the stage, the audience, and also be able to look back. So I'm kind of in the eye of the storm, mm-hmm. As the symphony takes over. For instance, when I first walk out, I come in the fourth minute of the piece. So I have to sit there like everyone else and wait. And that's wonderful and also horrible at the same time, because I'm ready to go. Let's do this.
Right.
But it's the Dvorak Cello Concerto. Tonight's the first rehearsal. It's, again, a celebration piece and something for everybody. And there are many features throughout the orchestra, from the concertmaster to the French horn, to the flute, to the clarinet. It's a wonderful experience.
Fairbanks is so lucky to have Davis Concert Hall here at UAF campus. We're so lucky to have a great Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra with Maestro Silberkant mm-hmm. At the helm, and to have you coming back year after year.
Right.
And we attract other guest artists that are really world-renowned artists, and to Little Fairbanks, Alaska, all the way up north.
Well, Little Fairbanks, Alaska just got worldwide attention. I don't know if you know why, but the cellists went into the field next to the university and they scraped into the earth a 900-foot cello lantern. And as I landed in Anchorage a few nights ago, my phone literally almost blew up. It wasn't a Samsung.
Yeah.
It was,
not literally.
Not literally.
Yes.
It was lighting up so much because the Alaska Daily News had caught on to this. And these cellists, these wonderful cellists, had filmed with a drone the fact that they carved this in the snow into the ground, this cello lantern for Halloween. And to hope, it was kind of like the bat signal from my perspective, that as I flew in, I could see it.
Did you?
Well, I did see it, and I posted it on social media, and it literally was picked up by Strad Magazine, Strings Magazine, the European social network stations. Fairbanks was, for a moment, yet again, really showcased in the way it should be, in the fact that it's a marvelous community.
And these cello students that you're speaking of, it's the Alaska Cello Intensive
that's
students,
right.
And they have been on Alaska Live so many times, and they bring their energy and their creativity right into the studio with them.
Yes.
And one of their big things is not just playing cello and not just playing classical music, but they play some pop music. But the other thing that they do is they have creative activities outside of the concert hall and outside of the practice studio. And I guess that was one of them. They took their bikes and their rakes out, right. And they made this cello lantern out on the field.
Well,
out
all
here.
You have to do is go onto yeah. Alaska Daily News and see it. It is an amazing video. But what you're saying is something bigger than, and I think that needs to be acknowledged, that music and the arts bring people together. And you basically celebrate life. And if it's music, you've got a soundtrack to that celebration. It's not just going to a concert. It's rallying as human beings to share yourselves, your day, your pains, your joys, your sorrows with each other. And truly, we need each other. And I've always seen the arts, music as a magnet for those things. But to see it so clear as these cellists with the cellos on their back and the brooms stuck in their bicycles and dragging tires with their tires.
Yes.
With their fat tire bikes around this field and working together and cheering each other and high-fiving. That really, truly was, I'll never forget that moment, seeing it. And then, of course, being a slight little part of it and that I get to celebrate with them this weekend. It's terrific.
I've seen that spirit in them outside of the Cello Institute also, because some of them have competed in the concerto competition mm-hmm. for kids, and they've had siblings that have competed either in their same, you know, age category or different age categories, and they're always rooting for each other. And it's the close-knit community that goes with the Fairbanks music community and arts community that is just so wonderful to see. And you see that from coming back year after year, Zuhl, and it's really neat to see that outside, you know, the world is starting to notice this also. Like you said, it blew up, it made it into Strad
Magazine. It's contagious, and I think the fact is that I think a wonderful attribute is having empathy for each other. So, for instance, it's a competition, but everyone has to get up there and do it. And you don't know what it's like to do it unless you've actually walked on stage and put yourself on the line to be expressive, to be communicative, and to try to speak from your heart, knowing full well that you could fail. And that's another thing that I think that it's why music in the lives of young people is so important, is that it does make them aware of being a human being and also standing up for themselves and being emotional and being okay with that. I mean, I'm supposed to pick up this box here and try to emote for you all, and maybe I'm not ready to do it. Maybe I'm faking it. Maybe I am weeping because something awful just happened in my life. But the point is that this music amplifies emotion, and sometimes we're not ready for it. But isn't that the important part? Is that we're never ready for it. And so to see these kids have empathy for each other and cheer each other on, knowing full well that someone else could be chosen over them, that's not the point. The point is that you've got to try, and you've got to have hope. And that's what's wonderful.
And those kids in the concerto competition, their prize is to get on stage at Davis Concert Hall and play with the Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra. Right. And it's just amazing for them, you know, to be able to do that. And the ones that, you know, may not make it that year go and cheer each other on, and they go and experience that, you know, in the audience. And it's not, like you said, it's not just sitting and watching. It is an experience, and it's a human experience that we've been doing for centuries. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's what makes us human and culture. It's experiencing these things, and it's really amazing. This cello, I know years ago you had one very cold, dark winter. You brought your 1693 Grofiller. Is this the same one? It doesn't look like the same one, possibly.
It is totally the same one.
It isn't the same one.
It's covered in rosin because I've been playing on it all morning.
Ah!
But this is the...
So tell me about that. There was... It was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. It was 40-something below, and you had
I was scared to death. I didn't realize that first of all, how cold that is. and you know what? You know how I found out how cold it was?
Uh-huh.
I was in a restaurant, and I had a T-shirt on, and I'd taken off. First of all, I was wondering why people plugged their cars in outside, and then we walked inside, and I took off all my layers, and I got a phone call, and I went outside, and it was okay. It wasn't so cold. And this person that was calling me was in Florida. They were asking me, it was like 90 degrees. And I said, it's 40 below here. And they said, what are you doing? Where are you? I said, I'm outside. And then they said, what? I said, yeah, it's not so bad. And of course, my breath is billowing around my face and things like this. And about 30 seconds later, violent shaking. I start actually. Oh my! And I went running back inside. I literally was. My body was shutting down.
Right. Because shake to create warmth.
And this was a different feeling than I had ever experienced because it was dry cold.
Yeah.
When it's wet cold, you're freezing at 30 above zero because it's just there's moisture and you feel like you're gonna freeze to death. This literally froze my core in about a minute and a half, where I was running like my legs were welded, no knees, with stiff legs running back into this place. Anyway, it was not funny at the time, but I find it very funny now. And the cello, that's when I went, oh my gosh, the cello, we've got a problem, because the cello is made in 1693, 323 years old, and it's wood, and wood cracks. As does your body shut down after a minute and a half. So I went straight back to my hotel, and I turned the shower on as high as I could, and I put the cello in the case. I leaned it up against the sink to create some wall of moisture.
So it could be in its own sauna for a while.
Sort of. I mean, it was. Yeah. I was like, I can't do this again. I should. It's not fair because I can't fix a crack on the cello. So I did check the weather before I came here, and it was a balmy 11 degrees.
Yeah, no, we're fine. It's 50 degrees warmer than it was last time you had it here.
So, so I carry the cello with me basically everywhere. I buy seats for it on the airplane.
You do. I buy a seat for it in the airplane, of course.
Mm-hmm. And I've had it for almost 20 years. It's made by Matteo Gufriller. It's a very, very famous cello. We were talking about if I named it earlier. And I've recently been calling it the Rosette Gufriller because it's got a rose carved on the top. So maybe I'll call it Rose.
It does. Where is
that? It's under the fingerboard. It's right here.
Oh, it's under the fingerboard. Yeah.
Which shows that back in 1693 when this was made, this fingerboard would have been ending here. It's a church bass. It was not meant to go high in the registers. So that would have been exposed.
Oh, interesting.
It's one of two. So that's my cello.
That's your cello. And how did you end up with a piece that was made in 1693? Because there has to be a story behind Zewell Bailey getting this cello that is probably one of just a few in the world.
It's luck. I mean, it's a miracle. It's luck. I mean, it really is. I had an angel sponsor come out of the woodwork who heard me play it. I had just borrowed it for the weekend. I never thought in a million years I would have been able to never take it back. I chose it because it haunted me. The cello bothered me. The sounds made me want more, made me want to search. It gave me this, it literally was this kind of, this feeling I'd never felt before. It actually was the sound of a cello in my head that I'd always thought as a child a cello should sound like, and I'd never heard it. And this person came up to me and asked me about the cello and secured it for me for the rest of my life. And that was 20 years ago. And again, I still can't believe that I get to hear this and experience my life through this cello every day.
Yeah.
I was in a cab in New York City about 8 years ago. And I never put it in the trunk. It's never out of my hands, really. But so it was on my lap. And the taxi cab stopped in Harlem. It was 2 a.m. coming back from the airport, and no one was around. And he slid the little glass back and said, "So, hey, buddy, what's in the box?" I said, "Oh, sir, this is a cello." He said, "Huh. How much is that thing worth?" I said, "Oh, not very much. It's used." I kept a straight face as I possibly could. And he goes, Oh. And he shut the glass and took me home. And I thought at that very moment, what could have happened? I mean, and why did I say used? That sounds very funny, but
yeah.
he didn't realize that no one wants very a used. Brand new cello. It's very used. Yes. I baby this thing because it gives me such pleasure.
Well, can we have the pleasure of hearing another piece? Zewell Bailey here on KUAC's Alaska Live.
Thank you.
Zewel Bailey here on KUAC's Alaska Live, and that was another one of the Bach cello suite movements, right?
I play that one a lot because I think, first of all, it's probably the most famous of all the Bach cello suites. It's also the first track of all recording of the Bach cello suites.
It's
also
number one.
Suite number one, Prelude, number one in G major. Again, I play it because people know it. I play it because it's kind of, to me, like the beginning. It is the beginning of Bach's writings for cello. And so he's experimenting with just the purity and the ease at which a cello that was used to playing single lines, like a single note, could basically give harmonies and such pleasure without a melody. I mean, the fact is that it's all of these beautiful... It's moving voices inside, bass, top. But what people don't realize is that there's actually a melody to that. It's the... sang and played the cello at the same
time.
It's embarrassing.
Who knew that was going to happen today?
I have never done that before. Hope this isn't being recorded.
Thank you. Thank you for pulling that melody out of there, though, because I had never thought about that before, and that was new to me.
Yeah, it's a secret little treasure.
Yeah.
It's always in the greatest classical works. There's always something that we feel, but we don't know. The surprise is that we do know that. And that is a beautiful melody inside of this music box that spins familiarity, but we don't know why it's so familiar. And it gives goosebumps, especially when you sing along with it, which I just did very badly. But I got goosebumps to my own horrible voice, so...
I did too. Not to hurt your horrible voice, but to finding that out. That was absolutely a little gem in there.
Yeah.
And I love how you describe the cello as having a voice, because I think the stringed instruments are, especially the bowed stringed instruments, they have a voice.
Yeah.
And that's one of my favorite parts of hearing cello and viola and violin and even bass when it's bowed. It's it has that the register of a human voice.
And there's also, I mean, the fact is our bow is our breath, and so and our left hands is kind of it represents the tongue and the mouth and the kind of the diction. So every time, I always tell young kids when I get ready to pull a bow, pull the sound, it's... And then the epo is...
As you're bowing.
Because the X,
yes.
Exactly right. So that's how we go over the fact that we're actually trying to take what is our most perfect instrument, the human voice, and project it through an inanimate object, a box, but yet make it so real. And the drag of the bow. I also had this wonderful conversation with young people the other day about why do we have to be so quiet in classical music? Why does everyone tell us we have to go there and sit still? I said, it's not discipline. It's the fact that the things that make classical music so beautiful are the subtleties, the acoustic part of it, all the little details. And we're so used to this wall of sound in life these days that silence is scary to people. That's where the whole silence is also music comes into play. So I say, if you sit really quietly, you'll hear things that you had no idea. And the soft stuff is where all the special things are.
And good concert halls are made
like
to
yours
project
here.
all.
Well, the good concert halls are also seen as instruments, not just rooms.
Yes.
The stage themselves are built in a way that they resonate.
And Davis Concert gorgeous Hall place. Is absolutely an instrument unto itself, like you say. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a gorgeous place, and it's a wonderful place to experience music. And you'll be on that very stage on Sunday at
yes.
4 with the Fairbanks Symphony Orchestra. Mm-hmm. You mentioned teaching kids, and were you a kid that needed to be prodded to play an instrument or practice, or were you one of those kids who needed to be pulled away from practicing to do some of your other studies?
I'm a product of my environment. And this is why, again, I think we can collectively celebrate Fairbanks, because I was given such opportunity and such awareness of where the arts fit into life. I took art classes. I learned to draw and paint when I was very little. I remember taking a sculpting course. I played sports. I got to know people in that regard. I took piano. My mom is a piano teacher. And at that time in Washington, D.C., they were teaching people very young, a Suzuki method of teaching. And so we, as having our lungs not developed yet, and wind instruments were kind of out of the play at the moment, we played piano and a stringed instrument. My sister plays the violin. I loved the cello so much as a 4-year-old that I had to be stopped playing it. And it was such an obsession. I sat on these things that people don't know about these days called telephone books as my chair, about 3 or 4 of them. And I loved the feeling of it. It's wonderful. It's sad. It's endearing, and it's cute to watch and to hear about what I was like as a child, that I was so rambunctious. I wasn't a disciplinary issue, but I definitely got into trouble, and the cello stopped all of that. I mean, it basically focused me and stopped all of my hyperactivity. And my parents did have to ask me to stop to do other subjects. And I kept saying things like, how is that going to help my cello playing? And interestingly, on a complete side note, I played at the Kennedy Center for a very world-renowned artist who, in front of the public, said, "Congratulations, you can play the cello. Now go get a life so you have something to share."
Oh.
And that was at 16 years old. And then I realized at that moment why the other subjects are so important,
yeah.
Why we need to be human beings, and that the act and technical aspect of playing an instrument is just the beginning. That's the freedom of then having something to share.
I have told a lot of UAF music students when they've been in on Alaska Live, wow, keep doing what you're doing, because you're really turning into the whole package of a performer. You can talk about the music. You can share your experiences. It's all about, how you share those things. And it's not just about how impeccably you can play.
Well, that's the whole discussion, is practice makes what?
Perfect.
Practice makes permanent. And what is perfect? I guarantee you, if I ever walk off stage and feel like I played perfectly, I'd quit. And there's nothing in my life that I've ever seen as being even close to perfect. And that's what gives me hope.
Yeah.
And so, when people say to me, I have to practice to try to make it perfect, this needs to be perfect, I say, whoa, 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 whoa. Seriously. First of all, some of our greatest performers in history were so far from perfect, and that's what made them interesting. Look at models, for instance. The reason why a model is a model is because they're a blank canvas. It's not because they're interesting. They're painted upon. They're not even real. And so that's the people we remember, the actors in movies, are not necessarily the most beautiful ones. They are the ones that got our attention,
yeah.
And that have the biggest or most spicy existence.
And if you were looking for perfection on stage every time, you would probably never want to perform with a symphony orchestra because you don't have control over their abilities.
Well, yeah, life, what do you have control of, really?
Yeah.
Think about it. I mean, that's called aging. You start to realize I can't control anything anymore. I'm 44 now. When I was 30, I thought I had it all figured out. I really did. I would give people advice. I was that guy who could be sitting in the airports with that sign going, free advice, $5. Advice, $5, or free advice.
Not even free.
You pay for free advice. Now I just have no idea why people do anything. I don't. It's not even what's happening these days. I just don't. That's what kind of makes it interesting, and the realization that we're all just doing the best we can, and a concert will be what it is because of where you are, and everybody in the whole hall will have a different perception of that concert based on where they came from.
Well, and thank goodness for Zuul Bailey's parents for saying you can't just be obsessed with the cello. You have to, you know, do these other subjects. You have to go and experience these other things.
Yeah.
And went on family vacation, did you take your cello?
Of course I did.
Of course.
But going back to now the distressing part, but also the gift, is that I did pay attention in school, but I was obsessed with the cello. And what the gift that comes with being a professional cellist is travel and seeing the things that I saw in history books and experiencing those. One of the greatest classes I took, which was in college, and I wish they would do this in high school, because I think it's more, I think you'll remember things and absorb things more through association, is do a course on music, art, history, and war. That all, like, basically you take, if you're studying a war, talk about the culture during that time period. Talk about everything else during that time period, just not the war itself and how it all affected each other, architecture. Because you take a piece of Debussy, for instance, and you relate it to an art masterpiece of Monet. And then you start to kind of go through, and you basically have a visual to the musical to then what's happening in fashion. Then you go through what's happening in architecture. Then you go through what's happening in politics and how it's just a mirror.
Related.
It's all the same thing. But all of a sudden, you don't think about, as a kid, remembering dates. You remember feelings. You remember visuals and like that. Oh, yes, of course. That's that whole time period. And so you can see all the sides of a particular time in history.
I don't think I was taught history that way because it turns out I'm not a history buff.
I'm not either until you start basically finding yourself in Red Square in Russia, which I did, and didn't realize all the stuff that went down there and that Lenin's body's right over there and not John Lennon. But and so
that's with an
eye. Bad joke. but that's what I mean by being there in person versus just seeing a picture. It becomes emotional. You're looking down at the same ground that Napoleon walked on when he walked through Red Square, having thought that he conquered Moscow.
We've all had that experience of hearing a piece of music and we're in some sort of setting and then hearing that piece of music again and being transported right back to that situation.
Sure.
And it just brings it all together. And
yeah.
It's a great way to teach, I think.
Well, Dvorak, the concerto I'm playing on Sunday, is a perfect example of a man who mapped out a concerto in the format of a concerto, but was basically losing the love of his life back in his homeland, Bohemia, and tried desperately to get back to see her before she died. She ended up dying. So he had this loss, hope, a melancholic thoughtfulness of their time shared together, all woven through this 40-minute concerto. Basically, it's life. And so when you hear this piece of music, not knowing any of that, you feel it and you don't know why. Oh, that's really pretty. Oh, that's really tense. Oh, that sounds like a beautiful song that I could see myself walking through the woods holding someone's hand or nice whatever. And the end sounds like a death. Yep, the end sounds like a death, but yet life must go on. There's hope after death.
And then
you read, you find out why he wrote it. And that's why he wrote it, at least in my opinion, because it's so clear. And being, of course, the age that I am now, I've experienced those things to now have had a life to empathize and also to channel that and feel it very deeply when I'm performing it.
And the piece that you're talking about is the one you'll be performing on Sunday.
Dvorak's Cello Concerto, yes.
Yeah. You are focused on outreach, too. It's one of the things that I know that you've been doing for many years. What's some of your favorite outreach projects that you've been doing lately?
Well, it's become a mission of mine. And going back to what I was saying, I'm not doing it because I think I should. I'm doing it because it made a huge difference in my entire existence. Everything that was brought to me as a child was brought to me. And I wouldn't have known had they not brought it to me. That includes my parents, that includes the educators, that includes the community, that includes the Kennedy Center, that everything in my surroundings. So being in a position now to be the artistic director of four series, one in Spokane, Washington, a Bach series, one in El Paso, Texas, one in Mesa, Arizona, and of course in Alaska.
And one in Sitka, yeah.
Right. The concerts are the cherry, it's the celebration points of any given residency. And every other day, every other hour spent in the community, hitting everything from hospice to cancer units to neonatal centers to nursing homes, retirement centers, prisons, the Highland Prison in Anchorage, to, of course, the obvious schools. I just played the other day in Arizona, and I did a pop-up concert where I just showed up at a library, and I played for an hour by myself, and about 7,500 people started sitting around. And I asked afterwards why, any questions, and someone said, why would you ever play in a library? I said, because people come to libraries to want to learn. And they want to know. Everyone here is taking a moment out of their life to try to better themselves in a library. And so why would I not bring it here? Because it's a surprise on, yeah, Here's something you didn't think about. So I'm on the road 300 days a year now, plus.
Oh, you're on the road 300 days, mm-hmm, plus. Wow, mm-hmm, That's a lot of travel.
It's a lot of travel, but I don't know any other way. And I'm hoping, I'm really hoping that this... And this also goes back to this cello lantern that they drew in the field. They know me from my last visit. They know me from the things that I've been trying to do. I'm meeting with them while I'm here.
The Alaska Cello Intensive, yes, students, yes.
That's the grass is greener where you water it. Yeah. And I really believe in that. I believe that you have to go into communities and not just do a concert and leave, because what is that? That's vacant to me. You've got to invest, and you've got to promise to come back. And you've got to come back soon, because it changes lives.
Will we see you here in February with the Sitka Winter Classics?
I hope so, because I'm trying to cover the whole state. Mm-hmm. And so I've got about four or five people that are coming to perform with our group, and we're going to be scattering all over the state. So during that week, we can hit as many places as possible. And that's the mission of the Sitka Summer Music Festival. We are the Alaska Classics. And that every time we infiltrate the state, we go as broad as possible.
So whether we see you here in February or not, it will be part of your work that you're bringing here.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We have a collaboration with the symphony. It's usually around the Valentine's Day week. It's chamber music or recitals or a feature of some kind, celebrating what we've been talking about.
So what does it mean to be the Sitka Artistic Director of the Classics? What is your role?
Well, that's a great question. Dreamer. Applying those, leading the way, seeing no boundaries. The boundaries are set by the board. They're the ones who say, oh, how are we going to do that? I am always trying to come up with... ways to challenge people, ways to make them feel comfortable, ways to make them have questions, and also to gather in ways that always to keep it fresh. So I'm in Alaska 4 months a year now.
Wow.
And we've started a cello seminar in Sitka. We have the festival that's all of June. The cello seminar brings musicians from all over the world for 3 weeks to Sitka. We have the autumn classics, the winter classics, or random other times of the year. I have to choose the musicians, choose the programs. based on the economic situation of the time, choose the locations that I think are underserved or need to be continually watered, as we talked about, and then I host. And then I give the pre-concert talks. I give I go into the community to represent. It's a full-time job.
That is. And you spend 4 months out of your year in Alaska. We are very blessed and lucky to have you.
Oh, thank you.
And we were so lucky to have you here on Alaska Live today, Zuhal. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks to Zuhal Bailey for being the Alaska Live guest today. And thanks to Alaska Archive Studio audience. Thank you. Thanks to John Peralt, sound engineer, and KUAC TV crew Mac Landry and Heather Hintzman. And thanks for enjoying Alaska Live with me, your host, Lori Neufeld.